to another episode of the Detox Podcast, a culture and conversation podcast where you can detox from the world around you, get a window into how other people live their lives. Come detox with Detox. I'm your host, Joe Shaw, and on today's episode, I had the absolute pleasure of speaking to librarian and writer John Hsu. John Hsu has made a career out of advocating for the people and things he cares about most, kids, books, and the people that connect them. He was named a Library Journal Mover and Shaker for his dynamic interactions with students and his passionate adoption of new technologies as a means of connecting authors, illustrators, books, and readers. He's the children's librarian for Bookalicious, a part-time lecturer at Rutgers University, and shares his love of reading with countless educators and students around the world. He served as the ambassador of school libraries for Scholastic Book Fairs for almost 6 years. He's the author of This is a School, illustrated by Veronica Miller Jameson, This is a Story, illustrated by Caldecott Scott Honor artist Lauren Castillo, Louder Than Hunger, and The Gift of Story, exploring the effective side of the reading life. He's a contributor to the Creativity Project, edited by Colby Sharp. John Hsu lives in Naperville, Illinois. Well, there's a little bit about John, and John and I get into a wonderful conversation, truly, truly a beautiful conversation about growth, about anxiety, about overcoming the voice inside your head, and about how having books that help you identify with what you're going through without leading you down a destructive path are so key. Truly, John and I laugh, maybe cry a little bit, maybe that's just me. It's a really wonderful conversation I think you're going to enjoy. But before we get there, I do need to let you know that today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Empire Toys. Nostalgia is something everyone loves, and Empire Toys in Keller, Texas is on nostalgia overload. With toys and action figures from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and today, Empire Toys is a one-stop shop for a trip down memory lane and a chance to reclaim what was once yours, but likely sold at a garage sale. Check out Empire Toys on Facebook, Instagram, or at TheEmpireToys.com. And by Self Unbound, your quality of life, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, is a direct reflection of the level of abundant energy, ease, and connection your nervous system has to experience your life. At Self Unbound, your nervous system takes center stage as we help unbind your limited healing potential through network spinal care. Access the first steps to your unbound journey by following us on Facebook, Instagram, or at www.selfunbound.com. Now, without further ado, my conversation with John Hsu is right up after this. Welcome back to the Detox Podcast. With me at this time is author extraordinaire and librarian extraordinaire, Mr. John Hsu. John, how are you doing today?
I am very well. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Of course. I'm excited to talk to you for a variety of reasons. We're going to talk about your book, which really, if you're listening to this on the day the episode drops, it has released today, not just this podcast, obviously,
yay!
But the book, Louder Than Hunger, has released today. If you're listening to this, I don't know, at some point in the future, guess what? It's already out and you can go buy it. That's the great news. So we're going to get into Louder Than Hunger. One thing that's really top of mind that I'm going to dig into here in just a moment as well is your role as a librarian. Speaking as a parent of two kids who are firmly in elementary school, the librarian plays such a key and pivotal role in shaping book recommendations for children. I've got some fond memories of myself. And then I had an interesting realization about an author that I really loved that I just didn't realize they had passed away years ago until I did some Googling earlier this week. So we'll get into all that. But first, right out of the gate, if you're brand new to the Detox Podcast, what I like to do is I like to welcome you and invite you to detox, I'm using air quotes here, from the world around you and get a window into how other people live their lives and sit back, relax, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, however long the episode is. But I do like to invite my guest to answer this first question right at the top of the show. And John, I'll ask you, what are you currently detoxing from?
Oh, what am I currently detoxing from? I am currently detoxing from feeling overwhelmed with putting stories out into the world and how people respond to them, perhaps negatively. So I'm trying to say to myself, when I put the book out into the world, it no longer belongs to me, it belongs to the world.
That's well said. I think about the fact that there are so many times where we, as the collective we as humans and individuals, we have this idea of a protective feeling, I think, over our art, whatever that may be. In this case, we're talking about a book, right? It could be this podcast, it could be an album, whatever it is. And the safety when you're creating it is that it's yours. Nobody's, you know, a few people are aware of it, but not too many. And it does, you don't have to sort of encounter that, any other feedback, right? But then the moment you put it out, you're proud of it. It's out there. Yeah. And then inevitably, you're not going to please everybody. There's going to be people that, you know, don't quite like it, or for one reason or another, or have their own opinion, something to say. And that is, can be difficult, right, to sort of interact with. And I think it's the struggle that I find, speaking personally, and also seen with some of my friends who create art as well, is the ability to navigate the feeling of ownership over the art versus the invitation for community by releasing the art. And that's a very difficult space to be in, you know?
Yeah, because something recently I've publicly acknowledged is that compliments are like are super, super hard for me. So I can get 500 compliments and I'll have a hard time accepting them. And then I'll get just one negative comment, and that will be the only thing that my brain will hold on to and will perseverate about.
Yeah, I feel like that's in one way. It becomes a way, well, again, I'll speak from experience. For me, when I have those situations where I've got the one negative comment, right, that we're talking about, I find, and I've recently been working through this personally, I found that when I have that, what it symbolizes to me, the reason why I personally get so hung up on it, is it validates to me that all of my imposter syndrome feelings were correct. When in reality, that's not right. You know, it's like it's this balancing act where I go, I'm not good enough. And then, like you said, 500 people. It's great. It's wonderful. One person's like, yeah, you're not good enough. Be like, aha, see, I knew it. Frank from Dayton, Ohio said it. So therefore, it's true.
Well, a friend gave me really, really good advice right before Louder Than Hunger was going out to reviewers. She said, I want you to write a letter to yourself that reminds you why you wrote Louder Than Hunger, and no one else is going to read it other than you, and you're going to open it the day, and I will not name the reviewer, you're going to open it the day this reviewer reviews your book. And the day that publication reviewed the book, it was a really good review. There was just one little line that my brain was like, no, that's actually kind of a negative. And I opened up the letter, and it centered me and it grounded me. And I guess it helped with the detox in a way. So, yeah, I was so grateful my friend told me to do that.
That's fantastic advice. And I think for those listening, if you're encountering a situation, maybe you're not about to be a published author, right? But you have your own version of something you're excited about, and you know that there's an opportunity where you're going to feel less than great when a particular person or persons looks at your work. That's a great way to sort of mitigate those future feelings of imposter syndrome. I love that. So that's a great piece of advice.
Thank you for asking the question.
Of course. I want to shift a little bit into I want to talk about your background as a librarian for a moment.
Well, I would love to.
And so, speaking, you know, as I mentioned before, being a parent of two kids that are firmly in the elementary school space, I want to talk about what drew you into the career path of a librarian, and what have you learned over the years?
Yeah. So I'm going to can I give you kind of my path that brought me to librarianship? All right. So we have to go all the way back to my childhood. So I was a kid who was really, really close to my grandma. My grandma was my best friend. My grandma's a character in Louder Than Hunger, which we'll talk about later. And I loved being with my grandma because my grandma was a super patient person, a super kind person. She brought me to the library all of the time, and she bought me books from the grocery store. And some of my favorite books that are forever tattooed on my heart, are those books that I bought at the grocery store. Every Saturday when we would go to Jewel Osco, I would often get a new book in the Disney collection. They were very popular in the 1980s. And I had all of them. And my favorite one was Goofy's Big Race. And my grandma read it to me so many times that I had it memorized. And there's a refrain in it, which is slow and steady, steady and slow. That's the way we'll always go. And I was a very anxious child who was always trying to rush through things. And my grandma would always recite that to me. And so I learned from a very early age the power of the read aloud. And as a child, I loved to play school. I would recreate my teacher's lessons every single day. So if we'd learned about similes in class, my imaginary students had to learn about similes. I forced my imaginary students to recite. They were imaginary. That's a key word. I forced them to recite poetry all of the time. And I would also play librarian as a child. And I'll show you on camera, but the listeners won't be able to see it. I still have the little library
case. I love that.
From when I was a kid. And when we look inside, there are cards like Santa Bear and Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, which was my favorite book to read aloud over and over. And on the card, you can see all of my imaginary students' names. And we'll come back to that later when we talk about Louder Than Hunger. And so there was something in my bedroom that was so magical, where I would bring my role as a teacher and a librarian together. But I never thought I would become a librarian. I always knew that I would become a teacher. So when I entered undergraduate, I declared my major as elementary education, and I would tell everyone that I was going to be the best elementary school teacher on the planet. And I worked at Barnes & Noble all through undergrad, and I was super, super hard on myself because I'd actually missed 2 years of high school, but I still graduated on time. And then I graduated from college in 3 years. So I put lots of pressure on myself, and it was really replacing my eating disorder in so many ways, which is the subject of Louder Than Hunger.
Right.
And so I became a third grade teacher, and I loved it. And then, as I always tell kids, I got promoted to fourth grade. I did not want to be a fourth grade teacher, but because of enrollment, it was my turn to go up to the next grade level. And I looped with my students, and it was so magical. And at that time, I went to library school to learn how to be a librarian. And one day, my principal came into my fourth grade classroom and asked me if I would please become the school librarian the next school year. And I always ask kids during school visits, do you think I said yes or no to my principal? And they all say, you said yes. And I always say, I said no, because I wasn't ready yet. And then she actually manipulated me by saying, if you become the school librarian, that means the kids who had you in the third grade and in the fourth grade get to have you as their librarian in the fifth grade. And I said, okay. And I loved it. And I did that for 9 years. And it's where I felt most at home. I love the hat of teacher librarian. I always say to kids, when I come to your school, I enter one, and when I use the hat analogy, they're like, they think I actually have hats that I'm going to get out.
Of course.
And so I say, I wear lots of hats when I come to your school. And the first hat is always reader, and it's where I'm most comfortable. And then the second hat is teacher. The third hat is teacher librarian. And then the fourth hat is writer. And when I speak with kids, I'm really wearing the number one hat, reader, and the third hat, teacher librarian, more than the other two. So I found my way to librarianship because I saw that libraries can be, as Pam Munez Ryan says, safe havens for the student you least suspect. And I was one of those kids who in so many ways was saved because of libraries and librarians and what I found in those spaces.
I appreciate thank you for sharing that. I think about the impact a librarian had on me. So one of the things slightly different, and not my school library, but I was very close to my public library, and I spent hours upon hours of my elementary school education hanging out in the stacks, right? Grabbing a ton of books, I would go through the Matt Christopher book series.
The sports books.
Yes. I went through all of them. I went through all of the Animorphs.
You know, the Animorphs are being adapted into graphic novels now that are really, really good. So I'm going to interject just for a moment. So one of my favorite questions to ask people, and I talk about this in one of my keynotes, is what do you remember about your elementary school library experience? Or what do you remember about the public library? Sure. Or what do you remember about the bookmobile? I put the bookmobile there because so many people have responded with the bookmobile. But I love also asking this question to bartenders and to Uber drivers and to servers. And something that I say in one of my presentations is that Animorphs is the book series that is named the most by people out in public who I ask. Yeah, I love asking that question. You learn so much about people's feelings about libraries and about literacy when you ask that question. So I'm so grateful that you just shared that.
You know, I want to add on to what you were saying about what do you remember the most. And I cannot the library that, and I still live in the same town. So I went away
to undergrad.
Yeah. And I came back cause I really like the city that I grew up in and I wanted to raise my family here. But the library, moved into a different building, maybe 10, 12, 13 years ago. I might have the math wrong on that. And the new building is great and it was an upgrade. It was wonderful. But the thing that I remember most, I will never forget this. There was a distinct smell.
I was going to ask.
Yes. Like it was just, it's a sense memory. And now, to this day, I drive by the building and it's been like repurposed to like a city government, local like utilities building or something. Mm. And I see it. I see it. And I still have that sense memory of the smell of the library. And I would be on the floor with a pile of books, reading through them. And the book that I was alluding to at the beginning of the show, so I talked about the different series, and I'll come back to them, but a librarian recommended to me the book Hatchet by Gary Paulson.
Oh, yeah, by Gary Paulson.
Yeah. And I was a kid who I loved the idea of being stranded individually and having to survive. Right. Yeah. So like, you know, we're talking about like Swiss Family Robinson. I really enjoyed Robinson Crusoe, Treasure Island to some extent. Right. And then these books of adventure, but being isolated. And then do you survive? And what do you learn about yourself when you survive? And then Lord of the Flies was another example, but it was recommended Hatchet. And then I loved it. And I had a copy that I had destroyed because I read it so much. And then they had, you know, subsequent books that Gary Paulson released.
Yeah.
And I was doing some research on him earlier this week, and I found out that he passed away in 2021. And I did not realize that. And it was a moment for me where I was quite sad. And then it was like, oh, I feel like my childhood didn't get a chance to say like goodbye in a way. And so I took a moment and I said goodbye and I moved on. It was wonderful. But coming back to you, right? I think
that's beautiful.
Thank you. It's so powerful.
I want to say one something right there. So you need to interview Colby Sharp.
Okay.
Colby Sharp is the co-creator of the Nerdy Book Club, and he's the editor of the Creativity Project. I'm one of the authors of that book. And his story in the Creativity Project is inspired by Hatchet. Oh. And Hatchet is his favorite book. It's really, I think, why he became a teacher. He had a hatchet when he was a kid, inspired by the book. And he used to go into like the forest behind his house and try to maybe get lost and imagine what would it be like to only have this hatchet. So when you were talking, I was thinking that sounds very similar to Colby Sharp's experiences.
I will take your recommendation. I love that.
But I'm so grateful you talked about the smell. So I often say, I am John Chu and I am a professional book smeller. Like this, I have a fairly strong, a lot of my memories are tied to scents.
Yeah.
And I encourage so many kids to smell books and to talk about the scent of the book. And like when I think about my the public library from my childhood, I can smell it right now. Mm. Yeah.
I think we both went to a place right in a moment. Yeah. It was wonderful, but it is. I can't help it. Like I open a book and inhale the book and just like it's the scent of reading and it's wonderful. I want to come back though because I want to talk about Louder Than Hunger. And so we talked about your background in becoming a librarian, and you talked about missing 2 years of high school. So talk to us about what Louder Than a Hunger, which released today, as we're talking about this, Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. Talk to me about your personal journey, which influenced the book Louder Than Hunger.
Yeah. Can I start by talking what Louder Than Hunger is about, and I'll bring myself into it? All right. So Louder Than Hunger is a novel in verse for, in my opinion, grade six and up. I think it works. For adults, I think it's a book for adults as well, as all children's books are. But Louder Than Hunger takes place in the year 1996. And the main character is Jacob Edward Stacy. And my legal name is John Edward Schumacher. And so Jake and I have the same initials. And the reason I named him Jake is because my favorite imaginary student when I was a child was named Jake. And I loved Jake. And Jake was like the teacher's pet. Yeah. And I really wish that my name were Jake when I was a child. And the second reason I named him Jake is because I needed a little bit of distance from myself. Because when I decided to write this story based on my own experiences, I didn't want to write a memoir, and not having him named John gave me a little bit of distance from the character. And it also allowed me to play with the truth, and it allowed me to play with the timeline. So Jacob Edward Stacy is in the eighth grade, and he is spiraling out of control because there is a very loud voice inside of his head that is telling him that he is a bad person, that he doesn't deserve to live. And the voice is getting louder and louder the less that he eats, and the less that he restricts, and the more that he listens to the voice, the less hope that he feels. And so he eventually is hospitalized in a facility called Whispering Pines. And I named it Whispering Pines because when I was a kid and still as an adult, I loved the Golden Girls. And Sophia is always threatened with being sent to Shady Pines. And the real facility that I was in, is called Linden Oaks. And so I felt like Whispering Pines brought together my love of Golden Girls and sounded enough like the facility that I was really in. In that part, which I call Act Two, Jake is admitted for anorexia nervosa, and he does not want to listen to anyone at the facility. He thinks they all made a horrible, horrible mistake. And my first night hospitalized, I remember going to the desk, and it was Nurse Nancy. And I told her that they made a horrible mistake, that I needed to leave this place, that I must call my grandma. And she kept saying very calmly, "You belong here. You need to be here." And I remember leaving and going back to my room and just, you know, crying myself to sleep. But I knew that I belonged there. And I knew that I belonged there because I was starting to become less sneaky. I was trying to get caught in many ways because I knew that I was going to die if somebody didn't help me. And now back to Jake's story. And so eventually, with lots of therapy and medication and refeeding and many, many setbacks along the way, Jake finally starts to find his way toward the road of recovery. And so it's based on my own experiences in the book. It's only 1 year in the life of Jake. I was actually hospitalized for 2 years. When I eventually went back to school, we had moved to a new community. And so nobody really knew much about my past. And so I was able to enter again as a freshman, but then work really, really hard to graduate in 3 years. And as I was saying before, when I got to college, I became like very, very obsessed with being the very best student. And in many ways, it was a manifestation of what I'd been going through earlier.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, sorry. That's the first time I've ever talked about the book where I brought myself in so much.
Yeah.
And so thank you for making me feel comfortable to do that.
Of course. Of course. I think it's we talk a lot about representation on this show and how it felt growing up. And again, I'm speaking from my own perspective, and I think I will go on a limb and say I think we're similar enough in age that I can say for both of us. It felt growing up that there weren't a lot of literature options that described real life situations and scenarios that children and teenagers would find themselves encountering. And I think having a book like Louder Than Hunger, I know there's been multiple instances where I've struggled with different eating disorders for one reason or another, and having a representation of this particular book gives children an opportunity to sort of see themselves and understand and learn without necessarily needing to go down that particular path.
Yeah. Can I address that a little bit?
Yeah, please go ahead.
About the books. Yeah. So when I was in the seventh grade, I was hospitalized in the eighth grade. In the seventh grade, I was pretty sure I had some form of an eating disorder. The voice was getting louder and louder. And I was a kid who loved to clarify things. I was a kid who loved to research things. I was a kid who spent a lot of time at the library, as we talked about.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget going to the Tinley Park Public Library and finding a library carol that was away from everyone else. And this would have been like 1993. Mm-hmm. And so like the internet is not how we think about it. The way that we search is not how we do it now. You know, like a lot of things led me to the microfiche machine. But anyway, I went to that library carol. It was probably like an Apple IIe. And I looked up anorexia, and I looked up eating disorder, and I looked up bulimia and anything else that I kind of like knew from pop culture. And it led me to so many harmful things, many of which I won't even name. It led me to many stories about Karen Carpenter, who died from anorexia nervosa. Yeah. And my goal was to become her. And so I read as much as I could to try to figure out what she did to become that person. Mm-hmm. This was when Tracy Gold was in the news lot from Growing Pains, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I said pangs.
Yeah.
And I read everything about her. And then it led me to books that, in my opinion, did not belong in the library. And this is not censorship in any way. They were books that were very, very harmful. They were books that were how-to manuals. They were books that I read over and over and over again, and I memorized, and I would try out all of the different things. And so when I felt it was time finally for me to write the true story of my childhood, but you know, as a different name, I was really afraid, because I didn't want to create a book that would be like those books were for me,
sure,
where a child who was very frightened, a child who was very anxious would go to the library and they would look up disordered eating or eating disorder, and it would lead them to a book written by John Chu that simply just taught them how to be sick. And so when I was writing Louder Than Hunger, I, of course, was always thinking about my younger self and trying to protect my younger self in a variety of ways. But something that I always had on a post-it note was something that I write in a book for adults, a book that I wrote for adults called The Gift of Story, which is about the affective side of the reading life. And in it, I write this, I'm going to quote myself, which always seems strange. Books can be the perfect prescriptions to let us know that we're going to be okay. And that was the thing that always guided me. If ever I was about to write a poem that wasn't going to be a good prescription for a child or someone vulnerable or an adult who's reading this because they're thinking about seeking treatment now, I knew it didn't belong in the book, which is why I think, and I'm the author, Louder Than Hunger is very different from other books about eating disorders that focus on certain words that Jake never uses, focuses on numbers that Jake never uses, and different scenarios that would then be somewhat toxic for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate you saying that because it's so true. And what I mean by that is, speaking for myself, having been in a place where I have pursued some personal destructive habits at a former time in life, it was a situation of I heard something that I was curious about. I did some additional research. I found less than desirable information, and it led me down a path that was not conducive to healthy living or even healthy habits. And by healthy, I just mean functioning. I mean, there was a period of time where I didn't care if I was functioning or not. And so more and more of these paths is what I was pursuing. And it took some radical intervention from some people that care deeply to help me out. And thank you for making me feel comfortable enough to be able to sort of share that, because I've not shared this on the show before. But what I think is so critical is the fact that you have the book that is not a how-to manual and is an opportunity for learning and identifying without sort of leading folks down this other path.
Yeah, it's really interesting when I stand in front of like 300 or 400 seventh graders, and most of my presentation before I talk about Louder Than Hunger is like super high energy and super joyful, and I'm giving away books and I'm telling jokes and we're smelling books and like we're going on this very like upbeat thing. And then I'm able to like be vulnerable with them, and I'm being vulnerable the whole time, but right. I'm able to say, when I was your age, I was struggling with OCD. I realized right away that kids didn't know. They don't know obsessive compulsive disorder is OCD. And so I was like, wait, I thought a lot of middle schoolers are familiar with obsessive compulsive disorder. And then once I started saying OCD, they knew what I was talking about. And when I talk about anxiety and I talk about depression, I talk about those three things before I talk about anorexia nervosa. And I find that the kids open up their hearts a lot more to me, and they're seeing in that moment that I've gone to the other side of that, and that there is a path to the other side of that. Because when I was their age, I didn't think I ever would get better, and in many ways I never wanted to get better. And I really wish that, like, I really wish that someone had given me a notebook. I mean, I did get a notebook like in the hospital, but way before that, and so this is just your thing to record your thoughts in. And I know that would have helped me in so many ways, rather than keeping it all inside all the time.
You talk about being in the schools and talking about OCD and talking about depression and anxiety, and then going into the discussion about anorexia and anorexia nervosa. Do I have that? All right, thank you. And I think that journey, that intentional step, I would say, is key, because you might have not, how do I say this? I think having the topics that are probably the most relatable to that population in that moment allows them the opportunity, like you said, to open up and listen and be vulnerable and then hear the message that you then go into.
Yeah. And in my own story there, I mean, I don't think I said this when I was book talking, because I was doing it different than I usually do, that Jake and I are both diagnosed with anorexia, obsessive compulsive disorder, depression, and anxiety. But once I started treating the anorexia, those other things were much more manageable, because they, in my own circumstances, in my case, they were very related to each other.
Yeah. I'm curious, and I apologize if this is going to sound clunky. Please correct me if it does come out in too clunky of a way. I'm interested asking you personally around, do you, maybe this is a better way to ask it. Do you have a recollection of why you initially started down that particular path?
Yeah, no, I do. But I pretty much my whole childhood, I was bullied in some form or another, some years more than others, some years less, obviously. But as I got older, it got more brutal. And I started to do a lot of self-hate talk to myself, and would repeat what people were saying about me, and was seeing that it was true. I mean, even though it wasn't true, I was telling myself that it was true. And then I was taking things away from myself. And then eventually the voice, I don't know exactly when it was, but eventually that all of that negative self-talk that was coming from others became the voice. And of course, the voice is me. And it's so interesting writing about a voice in Louder Than Hunger, because Jake is thinking it's somebody else who's talking to him, because I think he still probably thinks that it's more of the bullies, it's more of the outsiders who are saying it to him. But it's really his own voice now that has become a collection in some ways of all of those voices that then gets its own personality. Like the voice had a unique voice, which I can't quite describe. But anybody, I think everyone has some form of a voice. And there are different voices sometimes in our heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think, oh man, this is, well said. Thank you for sharing that. And
yeah, thank you. Thank you for the level of vulnerability.
Of course.
And plus, I've never, so this is what I love about talking about this book, is that every time there's something different that I discover about myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, by somebody else opening up too.
I think about when I was in that seventh grade range, right? And you talk about the voice, which is yourself, right? And I think for all of us, right, it's our own internal commentary, our dialogue on ourselves. And I know that I was very harsh on myself in a lot of ways, which led down certain paths that we talked about before. And this is where the speaking again from experience, growing up, I grew up in a very religious household, and I would bring up sort of these discussions to different leaders and mentors that I had at the time. And I would ask, like, what is this? Right. And the particular leaders that I had that advised me, I didn't have a great experience. I'm not speaking for everyone. I'm speaking for my own experience. Yeah. Said, oh, that's just quote unquote the devil. That's just quote unquote evil, right? You just got to ignore it. And it wasn't until, I mean, I was probably in my late, no, I was in my early 30s where I finally had a therapist that said, that's you. That has always been you. And you can't ignore it. You have to understand where it's coming from. You have to understand why you're saying it, what's driving the behavior, work through it, and then start healing. And I sat there and I cried because it was the first time where someone had given me the honest truth. Whereas forever, like you were talking about, Jacob thinks it's somebody else, right?
Yeah.
And so I forever thought, this is somebody else that's talking. It's got to be, right? And then it was very difficult. So I love that there's that distinction within the book. Yeah. All right. But yeah, no, I just wanted to share that because of the fact that I identified with what you were talking about, right? And so again, everybody has their own unique experiences, and I'm not here to say one thing or another is good or bad. I'm more speaking again from my own personal perspective. And I appreciate that you've, in the book, been able to articulate sort of Jake trying to figure out where this voice is coming from. And then in fact, you know, there's the ability to talk about, like we're having now, that the voice is an internal dialogue, and it is us turning some of those self-doubts and fears on ourselves and being way too harsh on ourselves.
Yeah. And it was scary sometimes writing the book because I had to put myself back in exactly how I felt when I was in the seventh grade, the eighth grade, how the voice talked to me, what the voice sounded like. And I always had to make sure that I didn't start listening to the voice as an adult, like don't go too far into it.
Yeah.
Because the, you know, at times the voice was very comforting as a child, but you know, the voice is toxic.
Well, I mean, we talked about the beginning at the beginning of the show where we talked about the reviews, right? And the over-indexing on the one particular note or line, but the ability to have the support group and the support system of friends that say, write the letter and then open it at this particular moment to help mitigate the voice,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And thankfully, people have said lots of really, really lovely things about
Lot
of Anger. I mean, like, my book stinks.
No. But there's a lot of wonderful things. But I think drawing the correlation to...
I know.
There's still that little bit that sometimes can be difficult to get over. I mean, we were even talking before we started, and I made a comment about, I talked about we at Detox, and I went, well, I don't know why I said it's just me. And I paused. I'm like, no, it's not just me. It's me. I do all of this. Yeah. Right. And you gave me some really sweet advice about that's right. It's not just you. It's you. So there we go.
Yeah. I would say, like, cause a lot of people say to me, I'm just a teacher. I'm just a third grader. I'm like, no, you are a third grader. You are John. You are Joe. You are more than those labels.
Right. I love it. As we're starting to wrap up, I want to talk to you about what are some of the lessons that you want student readers as well as adult readers to take from Louder Than Hunger?
Yeah. So I hope that they cry, which I know, like, I'm known in presentations for making people laugh a lot and cry a lot. There is some laughter in Louder Than Hunger, laughing moments, but I hope that it touches their heart. I hope it helps them develop more compassion. I hope it maybe inspires them to tell their own story. I hope it inspires them to pick up a notebook and a really cool pen and write poetry. I hope that it helps them better understand what it feels like to have an inner saboteur that's trying to destroy you in many ways, and that it's important to listen and it's important to show that you care. And I hope that it inspires kids to roller skate and to listen to Rent the Musical.
Yes.
And to go and watch all of the 1980s and 90s TV shows that I referenced, such as Full House, Family Matters, and The Golden Girls.
Yes, yes.
So I know that was a lot. Those were lots of wishes and hopes.
I know, but it's wonderful too, because in this space, I think this particular moment in time, we're recording in 2024. The book has come out. It's 2024. People might be listening to this in 2044. I don't know. But in this particular moment of time, I think there's a lot of anxiety that seems to be permeating through the students. At least I see it within my kids. And this, even though here at home, things are great. They've got a good friendship and support system. It feels like there's a little bit of additional undercurrent of anxiety. And I don't know if that's perception or if that's reality, but also sometimes perception is reality, right? Yeah. And so I think having resources and books that, as my kids are getting older, that they can lean on and they can utilize and they can feel that anchored, right, in their own self-worth and their own ability to understand the voice and not get sucked into sort of those trappings is wonderful. And I appreciate you for writing this book, because it's very much needed.
Oh, no, thank you. And I appreciate you for reading this book.
Yes. You talk about Rent the Musical. I tell you what, it's still my favorite show. I wrote a paper on Rent the Musical. I know I've referenced this on the show before. Freshman year in college. I do not think my English professor, Rodney Stevens, listens to this. I would be shocked if he does. But if he does, shout out to Professor Stevens, because he said you can write a paper anything you want. And so I wrote on Rent, and he did not bat an eye. He gave me some wonderful feedback that helped, and he was like, "This is exciting. I've never seen this show. I'm excited to watch it now." And so
I love that. Yeah. I love, because I've been talking about Rent more and more, I love hearing people's Rent stories. Can we end with me telling you a very quick Rent story?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, all right. So in the book Louder Than Hunger, which you've read, I mentioned Idina Menzel, and I love Idina Menzel. Mm-hmm. And Idina Menzel has helped me through so much. And in June of 2023, I was invited to do a program with Kara Menzel and Idina Menzel. And they're sisters. And together they created a beautiful picture book called Loud Mouse, and then its sequel, Proud Mouse. And so during the interview, I was trying not to be like, "I love you, Idina Menzel, so much. And I'm your biggest fan." I really wanted to give them, you know, equal voice. I actually asked Kara way more questions than I asked Idina. But then when I saw on the timer, we were on the main stage and there were maybe 600 librarians in the audience, I saw we only had 40 seconds left. And I'm like, okay, I've got to turn to her now and tell her everything that I love about her. And I must tell her about Louder Than Hunger. And I don't remember much of what I said during those 40 seconds, other than I cried and Idina Menzel cried. And she got up in front of everyone and she gave me the biggest hug and she kissed me on the cheek. And all I could think, Joe, was Maureen Johnson just kissed me.
Yes.
And for all of y'all that don't know, Maureen Johnson is the character who Idina Menzel plays.
Moo with me. Yeah.
Yes, moo with me.
Oh, I love that. I always wanted to be Mark. That was my dream role. My undergrad degree is in theater. Sadly, that dream.
Yeah, you have a Mark. You have a very Mark look.
Thank you. I have a scarf.
And
I
would, voice too.
Thank you.
You have the Mark voice.
Thank you. I will take that compliment. And I would walk around college campus with the scarf on, right, and then try and be like, I am channeling Mark now. And one of my best friends, AJ, shout out to AJ, was going to be Roger, right? And he was a real life rock star. And so we were like, all right, we're building the show. And it didn't come to pass, but maybe one day, right? Maybe one day. I love it. All right.
Oh, that makes me so happy. This is the first podcast where I've been able to talk about Rent.
Oh, it's not enough. I love it. I could keep going, but I won't. Because this is not the Rent podcast. That's part two. No. I love it. This has been incredible. We're going to shift to our final segment of the show, which is a segment I call Things to Check Out. It's a segment where I invite my guest and I will also share a recommendation of something to read, watch, and or listen to. I will go first while John thinks of some recommendations. Mm-hmm. And I would say this is a recommendation beyond Louder Than Hunger because of the fact that by this point in time, I have no doubt that all of our listeners have already gone and purchased a minimum of two copies of Louder Than Hunger, one for them and one for a friend. Yes. So some additional recommendations. I would say, let me just run down this. We had a lot of recommendations. I talked about Hatchet. I talked about Animorphs. I am actually in the midst of rereading Animorphs, and I have to say I am stoked and delighted just as much as the first time. Like, I remember everything that happened, but I'm going through the books. I'm like, what happened in this book? And I'm reading like a digital copy, right? And so I'm like scrolling and I'm reading and I'm like, oh, right, this is the book where this happened. Oh, I thought that character didn't get introduced till book 25 and now they're in here. And so it's a little bit of like comfort food, you know, because I've read it and I like it and it's bringing me back to feeling like I'm in the stacks, but it's also, I'm kind of discovering it again for the first time a little bit. So that's a recommendation. Check out Animorphs by the great Catherine Applegate, K.A. Applegate, as she was known in the Animorph time, who wrote a beautiful, a blurb on Louder Than a Hunger.
She did it. Yeah. Louder Than a Hunger. Yeah. Catherine Applegate. Beautiful blurb is on the cover, and then she wrote the foreword to my book, The Gift of Story.
Oh,
I've been very lucky.
I have to say, so just between you, me, and all the people listening, I would say she's one of my dream interviews. I would die if I got the opportunity to interview her. So,
oh, you will. Yes.
Yes. So I'm manifesting it. I'm putting it out.
And I will put it in good words. Yeah. She's so amazing. Oh. She and I are doing a school visit together in April.
Oh. I love that. That's incredible. So yes, Animorphs, check that out. As far as listening to, I'm actually, Spotify has rolled out the ability to listen to audiobooks. And one of my favorite authors is Michael Crichton. And the Jurassic Park books are also some like comfort reading. I've got a couple of really well-worn copies. And it was because reading Jurassic Park was the first time I discovered that a book was better than a movie because it is so much more expansive. Like some of the themes are there, but really the first movie is like maybe 25% of the book. And the rest of the book items are in like other subsequent movies, different stuff. But I loved it so much. And it turned me on to different works that he's done and whatnot. But I love that. And I've been re-listening to the Lost World, the second Jurassic Park book on audiobooks. I've been enjoying that. So that's a recommendation. And then something to watch. What have I been rewatching right now? I don't know. I've been rewatching a bunch of old stuff that I used to watch. I'm in the midst of a Breaking Bad rewatch. But we talked about Rent. So I would say you can watch Rent the movie or Rent the final Broadway performance.
Yeah, it's not as good as the stage version, but it has a lot of the original cast.
It does, but they do have a version of the state. They have the final Broadway performance stage version that's available as a copy. So it doesn't have the original cast, but you do get the opportunity to watch the stage version. So yeah. I recommend both of those two. I own both of those two, and I enjoy them thoroughly. So, John, what's a recommendation for people to read, watch, and listen to?
So a book that I am so happy is finally out in the year 2024 is the final book in the Amulet series by Kazu Kibishi. Oh. And this series started 16 years ago.
Whoa.
And I believe there has not been a new book in 5 years. And so now in 2024, the final book, Wave Rider, has just come out. I have seen so many kids go from being dormant readers. Donalyn Miller has always taught me to say dormant instead of reluctant, from dormant readers to avid readers. Every single book, except, well, the last one, I don't want to spoil anything, but every book 1 through 8 ends like with a cliffhanger. Oh. And when I was a school librarian, when kids would get to the third grade, I'd say, I'm so happy you're now in the third grade, because third grade is when I introduced the Amulet series. And let's say 5 books were out in the series at the time. I'd say to the child, you have to check out all 5. And they'd say, Mr. Shu, I only want to check out the first one. I'd say, no, you need to check out all 5. Because when you get to the end of book one, you're going to want book two immediately. And that child would always come to me and say, thank you, Mr. Shu. I read all 5 of them. I also have declared the Amulet series the best-smelling graphic novel of all time.
That's good to know.
So that goes back to our book smelling. So it's perfect for people who like fantasy. It is just action, adventure, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful graphic novel series. And so grateful the final book is out. Lauren Castillo, who is the illustrator of a book that I wrote called This Is a Story, has a new picture book that just came out in, what month are we in right now? February 2024, called Nana in the Country, which is the companion to a book where she won the Caldecott for 10 years ago called Nana in the City. And it is a book about a boy who's kind of anxious and shy, and his grandmother, who he always bonds with and who he loves and who he loves to learn with and teach her things. And I, of course, in Louder Than Hunger, write a lot about my grandmother. And so I'm always really drawn to books about grandma. So those are two, in addition to Dina Menzel and Kara Menzel's book, Loud Mouse and Proud Mouse. TV shows, I just finished binge watching the 22nd season of Law and Order. I love Law and Order. And then music-wise, I have been listening to Merrily We Roll Along, the new Broadway recording on repeat. So,
I love that. Well, John, if people want to follow you and see what you're up to, what's the best way for them to do that?
So, at Mr. M.R. Shu, S-C-H-U, Reads, R-E-A-D-S. So Mr. Shu Reads is what my blog is, my Instagram, Twitter, and then my website is johnshu.com.
This is perfect. John, thank you so much for coming on the show. You are welcome back anytime. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Oh, I just loved it. And hopefully the next time I see you, it will be in a production of Rent, though.
Oh, it will be 525,600 minutes. There we go. We'll end with that. Yeah. I love it. All right, John.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome. Listeners, you've been detoxing with Detox. Now go and make a more inclusive world.
If you know of an interesting person or story that needs to be told, please reach out to me at detoxpodcast@gmail.com. That's detalkspodcast@gmail.com. You can also reach out via Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at detoxpodcast, or visit detoxpodcast.com. Also, be sure to leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you like the show. It only takes a few seconds and it really helps us out. Link is in the show notes. Finally, thanks for listening. Please come back next week when we'll have another interesting conversation. And special thanks to my producers, Ben Lawant and Galan Aldaco. Without your help and support, this show wouldn't be possible. Thanks so much, guys.
Detox is a production of Vocal. For more information and more programming, please visit vocalnow.com. That's VOKALnow.com.